231. That's the average number of apps used by many companies. This leads to a lot of context switching that can distract employees and costs your company. Luckily, Grammarly can help. Grammarly's AI works in over 500,000 apps and websites, making it easy for your team to crank out clear, on-brand emails, documents, messages, and more. In just one click, they can go from blank page to first draft, all without leaving the page they're on. Grammarly has 15 years of experience building effective, secure AI that can be implemented in days with minimal IT overhead. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences, whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon. Join 70,000 teams who save an average of $5,000 per employee per year using Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Clinical research has shown there's a direct relationship between microdosing and the production of something called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a precursor to neuroplasticity. And so as we start to actively microdose 2 or 3 times a week over a month or 2 months, we're building that neuroplasticity. Our brains are becoming more plastic, which means we are more energized, which means we can learn quicker, which means we have more cognitive capacity in our everyday.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human.
Hello, humans. I'm your host, Dr. Yami, and I am so pleased to be here with you today. Thank you so much for subscribing, rating, reviewing, and also sharing these episodes. It means a lot to us, and it really helps the podcast grow. So we really appreciate it. To be human means to learn to use plant medicine, pharmaceuticals, these kinds of things to improve our well-being and our journey here in life. And my guest today, Paul Austin, is a big proponent of this. So Paul F. Austin is a prominent figure in psychedelics and has guided millions to safe and meaningful psychedelic experiences through his work as the founder of Third Wave. Featured in Forbes, Rolling Stone, and the BBC's Work Life, he pioneers the convergence of psychedelics, personal transformation, and professional success. Paul empowers leaders, creatives, and pioneers to leverage psychedelics for profound personal and professional growth. He views psychedelics as refined skills cultivated through mentorship, exploration, and purposeful use, critical for humanity's ongoing evolution. As the longest standing and youngest entrepreneur in this field, Paul's focus on merging psychedelics with professional development is evident in his transformative training program, Psychedelic Coaching Institute. The program caters to individuals who seek to integrate their psychedelic experiences into their business practices, all under the guidance of one of the industry's most trusted leaders. And in this episode, we talk about his journey and why he became interested in psychedelics, why he's so passionate about them. We also talk about what really are psychedelics, the different categories. So he breaks that down into us so that we can understand what they are, whether they're coming from natural plants or whether they're synthetic. We talk about what microdosing means rather than taking large doses, what the difference is. We talk about the evolution of how psychedelics have been viewed from the 60s until now and how that's changing. We talk about some of the potential benefits of microdosing and what it can do as far as our well-being, but we also talk about the potential risks. We talk about the legalities and some of the gray areas there. So a really interesting episode. It's not something that I know a ton about. I'm only just beginning to learn about it, but definitely something that I'm interested in, especially since there's been studies now on how it can really help people with PTSD, anxiety. I mean, these are things that can really decrease your quality of life. So if there's something out there that's safe, that allows you to potentially overcome some of these conditions and live a more peaceful, calm life where you feel really good in your body, feel really good in the world, you know, that's something to learn about. So I know it's controversial. I know it's definitely not for everybody. So definitely discretion is advised. Do not recommend, obviously, for children. Adults only, but even then, it's not something that everybody has access to in a legal and safe way. So keep that in mind. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I appreciate you so much. I hope that you have a plantastic day. And now let's welcome Paul Austin.
The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional. This podcast episode contains sensitive topics that may be triggering to certain people. Listener discretion is advised.
Paul Austin, welcome to I Am Human. It's a pleasure to have you today, and I'm excited to get to know you.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on the I Am Human podcast. I can't wait to talk about all the ways that I am human. And well, how microdosing might help with that.
You know? Maybe, yeah. Let's start with that. So how did you become interested in psychedelics and why are you so passionate about them?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small Midwestern town in West Michigan in a pretty traditional family. My parents were both Democrats, but we also went to church every Sunday for basically my entire childhood. And so it was quite a sheltered environment. And anything that was illegal was considered sort of off limits and quite bad. So as an example, I couldn't even drink alcohol around my parents till I was 21. They were very like anti that. But at the age of 16, as I started to get a driver's license and explore my own path of starting to become like an older adolescent and adult, I started to explore cannabis. And I found those experiences to be very connecting with peer groups and friends at the time and fun and interesting. And a few weeks after I started to smoke cannabis, my parents found out and they sat me down one Sunday after church and they said, you know, I haven't been this disappointed. My dad said this. I haven't been this disappointed since my brother passed away in a car accident 30 years ago. And so clearly my use of an illegal substance was really hard for them to process because of all of this propaganda from the war on drugs in the 70s and 80s and their sheltered upbringing in many ways as well. They had never smoked cannabis. You know, they weren't really into any of that stuff. And so that same friend who introduced me to cannabis a few years later introduced me to psychedelics, psilocybin mushrooms, and then LSD. And if cannabis was interesting, psychedelics were, I would say, illuminating and very insightful. And I realized that there was a gravitas and depth to them. And at that stage in life, I was, you know, trying to figure out who am I and who am I becoming and what am I doing and what career do I want and, you know, what do I want to do after graduation? And they just helped me to like really clarify what was important to me. And so from those early psychedelic experiences, I moved abroad at the age of 21. I lived abroad for 5 or 6 years. And in 2015, I started Third Wave as an educational platform to help people understand sort of the pros and cons of psychedelic use. Because up until that point in time, a lot of the information about psychedelics was more propaganda than actual rooted in scientific basis and knowledge. And so I wanted to create a platform where people could make informed decisions about their use. And sort of to finish this story, in 2018, soon after Michael Pollan's book came out, How to Change Your Mind, I sent it to my dad. He read it. And a few months after that, I ended up guiding him through a high-dose psilocybin experience. So in the span of, you know, a decade, he went from being not happy and really disappointed about my drug use to actually being open and exploring psychedelics in and of themselves. And I think that just speaks to the power of being authentic and speaking openly about our experiences and not hiding for fear of shame or guilt about what we feel could be helpful on our path of growth and healing and evolution.
Well, tell me, what are psychedelics? Because a lot of people have probably heard of LSD or acid and magic mushrooms and things like that. So are you able to like categorize them as to what is the spectrum of psychedelics? What does that mean?
The word psychedelic comes from two Greek words, psyche, meaning mind, and delos, meaning manifesting. And psyche, we think of it in the West, the modern West, as just the brain, but the Greeks thought of it as more of the soul, that the soul really represented. So soul manifesting. So when we work with these substances, they really unveil things that are below the surface, if you will. And there are three main types of psychedelics. So there's these substances called tryptamines, and tryptamines are things like psilocybin mushrooms and DMT. Those are the two most common tryptamines. There's lysergamides. The most common lysergamide is LSD. And then there are substances called phenethylamines. And phenethylamines, the two most common are mescaline, which is in the cacti, like peyote and San Pedro. And then MDMA is also a phenethylamine. Now, there are a couple psychedelics or things that people consider to be psychedelic that don't necessarily fall into one of these three categories, one of them being ketamine. Ketamine has become an increasingly popular dissociative for suicidality and mental health. A lot of people have probably heard about it in the news lately because of Matthew Perry's death. That is a legally available substance, and it's been approved by the FDA. A patented version of ketamine has been approved by the FDA to treat depression. And then you also have a substance called ibogaine. And ibogaine is an alkaloid that comes from a root bark in Gabon called iboga. And ibogaine is technically called an onerogen, which is a very fancy word for saying it induces a dreamlike state. And ibogaine is very effective at treating addiction, specifically opiate addiction. That's what it's most commonly used for. And there's also been a recent study published out of Stanford that shows ibogaine is highly effective for TBI, traumatic brain injury. And the study was done on Navy SEALs. And I know there are a lot of ex-NFL football players who are also working with ibogaine. So there's, I would say, you know, maybe 8 to 10 to 12 main psychedelics that people consider in sort of modern terminology to be that way. And what they all share in common is they facilitate a state that is similar, which is it's out of our normal conscious mind and into a different state of mind that allows us to access feelings, emotions, memories, stories that we don't otherwise have access to in normal waking consciousness.
I've heard a lot of people now using the terms plant medicine and, oh, I went on this plant medicine, things like ayahuasca, things like that. Where does that fall into? And is plant medicine just another term to make it seem not bad? And so we're just using this so it's less scary sounding? Or what does that mean when we hear the term plant medicine?
So the word psychedelic, because of what happened with LSD in the 60s, is reasonably stigmatized. I would say it's become much less stigmatized over the last 5 to 6 years, but it's reasonably stigmatized. And so as a way to differentiate these natural plant medicines and more synthetic psychedelics like MDMA, ketamine, and LSD, this term plant medicine has really come online, even to the point where the state of Colorado recently legalized natural medicines under the Natural Medicine Health Act. So it's even in policy now in terms of how it's referred to. And what that means is that encapsulates things that grow in nature. So that would be ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is a tea that is made from a leaf and a vine. And you combine the leaf and vine for this tea. The active ingredient in that is DMT, which is a tryptamine. There is peyote. Peyote is a cacti that the indigenous people of the Americas have used for up to 15,000 years. And the active alkaloid in peyote is mescaline. There's also San Pedro, which is a cacti from the Andes. That's another plant medicine. You have psilocybin mushrooms, which the terminology is a little off because psilocybin are mushrooms. They're fungi. They're not plants. But the idea is they're a natural medicine, which is why Colorado has that term Natural Medicine Health Act. And then you have 5-MeO-DMT. So 5-MeO-DMT is a toad venom. So I don't know how they discovered this, but you can milk a toad and then allow its venom to dry and then smoke that venom. And it's a very intense psychedelic experience.
Wow, that was a multi-step process to figure that out. The dude that figured that out.
And then there's ibogaine and iboga, which is the other natural medicine. So you have ayahuasca, you have psilocybin mushrooms, you have the cacti, peyote San Pedro, you have 5-MeO-DMT, and you have iboga. Those are the five main natural medicines. And one of the reasons it's come more into the lexicon as well is because a lot of cities have decriminalized them. So you have Detroit, Oakland, Seattle, Berkeley, Cambridge, Ann Arbor, some other university towns. So there are more and more university towns that have also decriminalized all these plant medicines because it's a bit absurd that at any point we've tried to criminalize nature. It's sort of the underlying ethos of that movement.
Okay, so you talked earlier about the experience that your dad had, and then you mentioned the 60s, and we're thinking of people like going on trips and getting, quote, high. So what's the difference between using these substances in that way and what you're calling microdosing?
It's a great question. I will be as, I would say, precise and dense as I can be. So think of microdosing and high dosing as like two dials on the same radio, almost like an AM and an FM. So the substance can be the same, but the experience is very different. You know, most commonly FM is music, AM is talk radio, just as an example, as a metaphor to sort of understand it. Now, we've been working with high doses for thousands of years historically, right? And so it really facilitates what's called a mystical experience. And in modern clinical research, that mystical experience is shown to have a number of positive benefits. People are less depressed. They are less likely to be addicted. They have less anxiety, especially end-of-life anxiety. So there's something that this high dose of psychedelic does that connects us to something greater than ourselves. A microdose is what's called a sub-perceptual or even sub-intoxicating dose of a psychedelic. That means when you take a microdose, you might notice it a little bit, but you can navigate your everyday life just as you have been navigating it, right? That's sort of the promise of it, that it's not going to be disruptive. So just like, you know, I can drink this cup of coffee in the morning and still go about my everyday as I would, I could also take a microdose in the morning and still go about my everyday just as I would. And the idea with microdosing is that it's about 1/10 of a regular dose of psychedelics. So if a high dose of psilocybin is about 2 grams, that's the starting point. A microdose is about 200 milligrams, 0.2 grams. And LSD is anywhere from 10 to 20 micrograms. The exact amount really depends on the individual. There is some calibration that's required to get a sense of how useful or effective is this going to be for me. So usually what I advise folks is to start low and go slow. You can always take more. You can't necessarily take less. Once you buy the ticket, you take the ride. So the final piece of this that's a good way to understand the difference is that higher doses of psychedelics are typically done on a very occasional basis. So you might do it once every 3 months or once every 6 months, whereas a microdose, you usually commit to a protocol where you're doing it 2 or 3 times a week for a period of 30 to 60 days is usually what I advise. And so the metaphor that I use here to describe the difference, it's like going to the dentist. Every 6 months, we go to the dentist to get a deep clean on our oral hygiene. Every day, we brush our teeth, we floss, you know, we make sure that we're maintaining our sort of cleanliness. Working with psychedelics is similar. Every now and then, you'll do that deep experience that's really profound, mystical, kind of acts as a spiritual reset. And every day, part of integration is how do I show up and practice new behaviors that are beneficial? So how do I meditate every day or commit to doing breath work or yoga or movement? Because so many people with psychedelics get caught up, I would say, in the transcendent aspects. And what I've always been much more curious about and interested in is the applied practice of working with psychedelics. In other words, because psychedelics facilitate neuroplasticity, how can we actually utilize that sort of window of plasticity to make tangible changes in our everyday life so we don't become psychologically dependent on these substances and we have to keep taking them in order to feel good or feel better? There has to be a sort of way in which it supports change so our normal everyday life is not beholden to continuing to take this substance again and again.
That makes sense. It applies a lot to the title of this podcast too, because what you're saying is how do we use these substances to help us be better humans rather than thinking about the, you know, the upper, you know, what's beyond, which can give really great feelings, but we need to be able to apply it to here. I'm curious because I don't know a lot about these substances and how they're used, but one of the things that there's been a lot of press about is using psilocybin for PTSD. Now, would that be a one-time high dose? Because what I've heard is that you could be essentially cured of PTSD after one treatment. Is that a high dose that you use with a therapist, with somebody that's guiding you through the process? Or could that also be with microdosing?
Great question. So PTSD is very particular as an indication. And that's because the prior trauma that occurred requires a certain set and setting and approach in order to heal that experience. It's often like a splinter that's lodged in the subconscious or the unconscious. And so when we work with a psychedelic, it opens it up. So we ourselves can sort of extract that splinter and heal, you know, the nightmares or the night sweat, whatever is happening as a result of having these symptoms of PTSD. The most common substance, the most clinical research exists on MDMA for PTSD. So MDMA is also called ecstasy. There's a company called Lykos Therapeutics that brought MDMA through phase 3 clinical trials, worked side by side with the FDA, and then 2 weeks ago tried to get it approved by the FDA. MDMA for PTSD, and the FDA rejected it for reasons which I won't get too deep into because it's a bit of a distraction. Psilocybin can also be used for PTSD. I would say that happens a lot in the underground because psilocybin outside of Oregon and Colorado is still largely illegal. And ayahuasca, there's a lot of nonprofits that will send war veterans down to South America or Central America to work with ayahuasca for PTSD. What is most common in these approaches is, like with ayahuasca, typically folks are going down and drinking ayahuasca 3 or 4 times in the span of basically 7 to 10 days. So it's multiple sessions over the span of 1 to 2 weeks that they're working with ayahuasca. MDMA, the protocol is 3 times in 3 months with psychotherapeutic support before and after. Psilocybin, it depends, but it's usually, again, 2 or 3 times over 2 or 3 months where there will be a few high doses that are given. Now, we have some research on psilocybin and ayahuasca, but not a lot. Most of the research exists on MDMA. And so in those phase 3 clinical trials, when MDMA was provided for people who on average had suffered with PTSD for 17 years, when MDMA was provided, 70% of those individuals were cured. So they no longer had PTSD symptoms, and this was up to a year after the initial treatment. So all that to say, it's showing to be a very promising treatment. My bet is once this is fully rolled out, that efficacy might drop a little bit because these clinical trials are very contained. But current treatments for PTSD only work about 20% of the time, if at all. And so I think just having more options that are potentially beneficial, especially psychedelics, would be a net win for veterans and those who are survivors of sexual assault and other people who have PTSD for various reasons.
So, you know, you were talking about how psychedelics were viewed in the 60s, and, you know, they're being used very differently too. So is that changing, especially with books coming out, articles coming out, some therapeutic applications like this? Are you seeing that the public perception of psychedelics is evolving?
So this is where the name of the educational platform that I started, Third Wave, comes from. The first wave being the ancient and indigenous use of psychedelics for thousands of years. The second wave being the counterculture, and now the third wave being more modern times. And what's interesting about the 50s and 60s is, you know, when LSD was invented in 1938 and then its psychedelic properties were discovered in 1943, a lot of the initial interest was in the medical and clinical applications of LSD and psilocybin mushrooms. And so there were over 1,000 clinical papers published on LSD. And the challenge, or the sort of way it went sideways, is when Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert specifically, but also you had individuals like Ken Kesey, who wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, really started to openly pass out LSD in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then more broadly to anyone and everyone that wanted it because it was legal and accessible and available. And what ended up happening is because it was so chaotic, because you had a lot of people, especially bad media coverage around what people were doing on very high doses of LSD. In 1966, California made it illegal. And then in 1968, the federal government followed suit and made LSD illegal and shut down all of the research at that point in time. And so the issue was more so on LSD and the amount of LSD that was being handed out. In other words, people weren't microdosing. People were taking very, very high doses. And the fact that when it jumped from clinic to culture, culture wasn't ready. And the reason for that is because we hadn't had access to a psychedelic like this really in the history of the sort of Western civilization, right? The last time we had access to psychedelics was in something called the Eleusinian Mysteries, which is what Plato and Aristotle and Marcus Aurelius and other sort of philosophers and thinkers and great mathematicians participated in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. But that was shut down by the Catholic Church in the 4th century. So this was the first time that psychedelics were coming back into the fold. It was a massive experiment, and there was just way too much of it way too quick. And so there was this backlash. And so when I started Third Wave in 2015, a core part of my intention was not to focus as much on the clinical and medical side, because a lot of that had been well established in the 50s. And now we have institutions like Johns Hopkins and UCLA and UCSF and NYU and Columbia and Yale and Harvard and University of Michigan. And, you know, the list goes on in modern times of major universities that are doing psychedelic research. That's all in good. The challenge is, how do we go from those laboratories into broader culture? And we're already experiencing this in modern times. In 2023, 8 million people took psilocybin mushrooms in the United States. 4 million of those people were microdosing in 2023. And so the reason I've focused so much publicly on microdosing and talk so much about it is because my whole thing is, I don't think LSD was the problem necessarily in the 60s. I think we were just doing way too much of it way too often. And so if there's a way in which we can communicate publicly the necessity of starting low and going slow, sort of dipping your toe before you dive in deep, trying microdosing first and seeing maybe that's all someone really needs to find some of the benefits. And then if they feel called to go deeper, they can do that. But I think leading with microdosing and understanding that microdosing has a lot of benefits helps to mitigate a lot of the potential risks as this grows in popularity. Because to do a high dose well, you really need a coach, a therapist, a guide, a facilitator. You need someone who is professionally trained. And that can be difficult to find at this point in time because it's still largely illegal in most places in the West.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
What are the risks? What are the contraindications? Can someone get addicted to this stuff? I mean, obviously the thing that we heard about growing up is that you're going to jump off a balcony, you know, bad trips, you know, people end up dying and stuff like that. So I know that there's difference between these high doses and microdosing, but tell us, what are the risks and contraindication of using these substances?
So probably the riskiest thing about psychedelics is that they are still illegal in most places. That's usually what I when I tell folks that the chance of landing in jail is one of the biggest risks associated with their use. What's interesting about psychedelics is even though they're these Schedule I substances, according to the DEA, they actually have no addictive potential. In fact, they're anti-addictive. Clinical research has shown that they're actually really helpful at healing certain types of addiction. And they're incredibly safe. So there was someone who worked for the UK Home Ministry, David Nutt, who showed that taking mushrooms is actually safer than riding a horse. And that psilocybin mushrooms is the safest of all of the drugs that we have access to. It's safer than alcohol. It's safer than tobacco. It's safer than cannabis. It's safer than benzodiazepines. It's even safer than antidepressants. And so the risks are very minimal, but there are risks, right? I think that's important to emphasize. So one of the main risks is that if someone is on a psychiatric medication, whether that's an SSRI or a mood stabilizer or even ADHD medication, and they're interested in working with psychedelics, I always advise to do that under the guidance of a medical professional. And you'd be surprised at how many healthcare professionals now have enough context or awareness about psychedelics to help people to navigate that appropriately. And in fact, we have a training program through Third Wave where we train practitioners and clinicians. And so we even have a directory of individuals on our website that can help people, support people as they might want to navigate this space. I'd say the other main risk is if doing a very high dose of a psychedelic, let's say a high dose of psilocybin mushrooms, the main risk is that it's in a set and setting that is not optimal. And so most of the horror stories that we hear about LSD or psilocybin mushrooms is someone takes a very high dose, they're at a rave or a festival, they're out with a bunch of friends, there's not a contained setting with someone who is a professional who is there to support them, and then they end up potentially really losing it. They get high levels of paranoia, they get a lot of anxiety. So a lot of that can be mitigated by working with a trained professional, not trying to do the highest dose possible right away, like kind of easing our way in. And then also, I would say anyone who has a predisposition to psychosis or schizophrenia should not work with psychedelics. Anyone who has a personality disorder should be very cautious about working with psychedelics. The people who are sort of most well-suited to work with psychedelics are those who have major depressive disorder, those who have certain forms of addiction, and those who may have generalized anxiety disorder. Those are usually the three cleanest indications for psychedelic work. And what's beautiful about something like psilocybin mushrooms is that it's not necessarily contraindicated with SSRIs. So there are clinical research has shown that you can take psilocybin mushrooms while you are on SSRIs. They are not contraindicated. And it's still important to emphasize that if someone were going to do that under the guidance of a medical professional, because if you've been on SSRIs for a number of years, there's a lot of latent emotion that can come to the surface once you start to wean off of it. And so how the nervous system can hold that and regulate through it is a really key aspect of weaning off SSRIs, but also potentially working with psychedelics in that process as well. Because psychedelics are catalytic. They're going to open up a lot of doors that have been closed for a long time. And that can be highly destabilizing, right? That's a huge risk with working with high doses of psychedelics is that they are naturally destabilizing. They are pattern interrupters, which is why they're so good at what they do. But you need support in that process. Because if you become too destabilized, your life can fall apart. And that can happen from time to time with psychedelics. And that can be very difficult to manage and navigate.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much for clarifying that and giving us that information. Okay. So now that we've gotten that part out of the way, let's talk about what are the benefits of microdosing and how can these psychedelics support our well-being? So in the way that you're talking about us trying it, microdosing, starting low, sub-perceptible levels, what can we expect to really be happening?
I'll do like the deep 2 to 3 minute dive on this. If folks want to go deeper on microdosing, I have a book called Mastering Microdosing, which is on Amazon. It's really accessible, very easy to read. It's sort of part story, part reference, so they can go really deep into detail around that. So the two most common substances that people microdose are psilocybin mushrooms and LSD. Those are the two most common substances that people microdose. Psilocybin is what I would call, it's a bit more bodily, it's a bit more emotional, somatic. Even, whereas LSD is a bit more cognitive. And so if someone is really interested in improving cognitive performance, becoming more creative, even becoming more extroverted, I usually say you know, you might want to look at what LSD could do for you. Where if someone wants to get off antidepressants, they're in a therapeutic container, they want to sort of be more in touch with their body, they even want to work with a natural medicine rather than a synthetic, I usually say psilocybin might be great for you. I would say about 90% of people who microdose with psilocybin. Because that is much more accessible. It's much more available. Even on third wave, we have a mushroom grow kit. So people, you can grow your own mushrooms quite easily. And so people love having that control over their medicine supply. And the two main benefits, actually three main benefits that clinical research has shown so far is better mood, better energy, and better sleep. So better mood, better energy, and better sleep. And who doesn't want a better mood, more energy, and better sleep. And this has been shown specifically with LSD in clinical trials out of New Zealand. There's a company called Mind Biotherapeutics that has essentially sent individuals home with 10 micrograms of LSD. They do that twice a week. And at the end of that five-week protocol, they take a measurement. And there was an overall 63% drop in depression scores with that group. And 52% of people no longer qualified for having depression at the end of that protocol. So the benefits are substantial. I would say the risks are much more mitigated compared to high doses of psychedelics, specifically because microdosing isn't nearly as destabilizing. It will shake things up a little bit, but it's not going to shake the snow globe up entirely. And if we go a little bit deeper, so I mentioned some of the sort of high-level benefits, what's going on the surface is when we microdose, we're helping to regrow new dendrites and neurons. And so we're activating these neurons that have sort of died away in our brain. And in reactivating neuronal growth, that's responsible for helping people to have a better mood, to have more energy, to get out of depressive states. And this is what we call neuroplasticity. Clinical research has shown there's a direct relationship between microdosing and the production of something called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a precursor to neuroplasticity. And so as we start to actively microdose two or three times a week over a month or 2 months, we're building that neuroplasticity. Our brains are becoming more plastic, which means we are more energized, which means we can learn quicker, which means we have more cognitive capacity in our everyday. The other main benefit outside of neuroplasticity is when we work with these low doses of psychedelics, it helps to downregulate the fear response from our amygdala. So the amygdala is a tiny almond-shaped sized part of the brain. It's also called the reptilian brain. It's the oldest part of our brain. And our fear response comes from that, the fight or flight. And in modern times, especially, we are stuck in fight or flight. We are stuck in that fear response. We constantly think, our body constantly thinks we're being attacked by a saber-toothed tiger because of all the stimulation that's going on. So when we start to microdose, we can actually step out of that reactivity a little bit. It helps to downregulate the fear response from the amygdala so we can make choices and decisions from a much more regulated and responsive perspective. The way that I love to describe it, it just provides a little bit of space between the thing and how we choose to respond to the thing. So that habitual pattern gets interrupted so we can make more intentional choices about how we want to respond. And when that fear response is downregulated, then we can make the difficult decisions that we need to make. Because so oftentimes, there's a way in which hard choices, easy life, easy choices, hard life. And we are very good at procrastinating on those hard choices because they're hard, because they're difficult, because they're confronting. There's fear that comes up about the changes that we are going through. When we start to work with these low doses of psychedelics, it helps that fear to subside. So we can actually make choices from a centered, intentional perspective, which helps us to live lives with greater courage. And in my opinion, greater courage results in a better life because we're able to make those difficult decisions. We're able to have those difficult conversations that otherwise we would not be as capable of having. So I know there's a lot there. I would say more neuroplastic, right? The brain becomes more plastic, we're more courageous. And then clinical research shows better sleep, better mood, more energy. That would sort of how I encapsulate it.
Yeah, and that like you said, who wouldn't want that? So I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in that. Once you decide to start microdosing, is it just a few months and you're done? Or could this potentially be a forever thing?
So that's a great question. And I think it depends on the individual. What I advise and what we advise is for that first protocol, go a minimum of a month, two or three times a week. Give it at least 1 month so you can start to see and notice if there are any benefits that are happening. Typically, people will go anywhere from 30 to 90 days on that initial protocol. And then it's helpful to take 2 or 3 weeks off every, I would say, 1 to 3 months. And this is very particular. It's very specific. It's not like Prozac or Zoloft or Lexapro where you're just taking this pill every day for the rest of your life. This is something that's a bit more skillful. So we have to learn what dosage is appropriate for me. How am I responding to it? What's the frequency that is ideal for me? So there does need to be some experimentation. And what I emphasize is microdosing is not a magic pill. But because it helps to catalyze greater neuroplasticity, part of the beautiful aspect of working with microdoses of psychedelics is that we can utilize that energy to weave in new behavioral changes. So when I coach individuals on this, I tell them, yeah, we're going to take you through a microdosing protocol, sure, but that's more secondary to the primary focus. The primary focus is helping you commit to a practice that will actually be beneficial for you in the long term as a habit. The most common one being, from my perspective, meditation. But that could be, you know, breath work. That could be yoga. That could be a change in diet, exercise, sleep, lifestyle practices as well. So what's much more important is that the protocols are used intentionally to change our behavior that will last us beyond just that protocol. Now, whether or not someone might need to be on this, quote unquote, forever, I think that that would depend on how much work they're putting in while they have these windows of plasticity. I do know quite a few people who, instead of being on Prozac, are now microdosing more consistently and almost use it as a prophylactic against depression. So I think there could be use cases for that. I also strongly believe that there is a use case for higher doses on an occasional basis because higher doses have shown to be really effective at treating depression. And then maybe a microdose that's done, maybe, you know, there's a high dose. There's a microdosing protocol done after the high dose. There's a break for maybe a month or 2 months, and then there might be a rinse and repeat for some folks. So there could be a way in which psychedelics become a practice for someone, just like they practice meditation, just like they practice breath work. They might practice working with psychedelics. And that's why, broadly speaking, I refer to psychedelic use as a skill, right? It's a skill that we can cultivate. It's a skill that we can master, just like we can learn to cook, read, write, dance, play music. We can also learn how to work with psychedelics, and they help us to become more present, more available, more aware, more connected. But the key point is intention. And I think that is true of all life. We have to be intentional with that use. We have to be clear about why we're doing it. We have to be making choices along the way. This isn't just another drug that we're taking to see what happens. It's really an intelligence that we're working with to be intentional about specific outcomes that we're looking to create in our lives.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so basically there's no one size fits all, as there's a lot of things in life. So, okay, one last question before we do get zippy through the wrap-up questions. Let's talk about legality. So if someone decides to do this, are we able to do it in a legal way or not? So yeah, tell us about that.
I'll be as brief as I can. So Oregon has legalized psilocybin mushrooms. So if you're in the United States or anywhere in the world, you can fly to Oregon today and legally do it in Oregon. Colorado has also legalized natural medicine. So that means mushrooms, ayahuasca, San Pedro, Iboga, 5-MeO-DMT. You can go to Colorado today and you can legally work with these natural medicines in Colorado. Jamaica has legal psilocybin mushrooms. Most of Central and South America has decriminalized or legalized mushrooms and ayahuasca. The Netherlands has legal psilocybin truffles for those of you who are in Europe. And then there's a smattering of other countries like the British Virgin Islands that have no legal policy around these. Portugal as well has decriminalized all drugs. So there's a lot of retreats that are starting up in Portugal as well. And there's this weird thing. There's a lot of places that have decriminalized it, which means it's the lowest law enforcement priority. So you can do it. You can practice with it there. There's just no regulated supply. Oregon and Colorado and Jamaica and the Netherlands actually have sort of a legal regulated market now, so there's a bit more policy around it. Now, the final thing on that note is, although it's illegal federally still, it's a Schedule 1, all psychedelics are Schedule 1 substances, the DEA has made it abundantly clear that they are not interested in pursuing this, that they are not going to crack down on people who use it medically or who use it for intentional purposes. And so they're so focused on fentanyl and cocaine and other addictive substances. So there's this weird gray area that's opened up where now you can basically go online, you can order microdosing supplements from any number of places or chocolate bars or whatever it is, and they'll just ship it to your home. And so there's this weird gap that has now opened up in this space where it's sort of like all over the place. It's unregulated, which is the challenge because sometimes you don't know what you're getting, but it is more accessible and available now than it ever has been before.
So yeah, there's still some gray there. And if you live in certain places, it's a lot more likely that you're not going to get in trouble, but still correct, potentially in some areas.
Correct.
All right. Well, this has been great, Paul. I really appreciate all this information. Something I'm very interested in, you know, seeing all the changes here, and especially for some family members that might suffer from PTSD, like true PTSD from their military histories and things like that. So I live in Washington State, so right next door to Oregon.
Okay, Washington might be the next state to legalize.
Yeah, so that's I would not be surprised. Yeah. So I'm interested in that for some of my family members. Okay, let's zip through these wrap-up questions. What do you wish more people knew?
I wish more people knew that psychedelics are safe and effective when used intentionally.
How do you define success in this lifetime?
I define success as sleeping 8 hours a night, having a regulated nervous system, and pursuing work and relationships that are healthy and nourishing for us.
I love that. Is there a goal or a dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
There's so much. I would love to have kids. I'm 34 and I don't have a family yet. So I would love to have a family and I would love to have kids. And I would love to go hiking in the Himalayas. I've been in the Himalayas before, but there was a book called The Snow Leopard that was published. And it's about this Dolpol region of the Himalayas. And I would love to go hiking in the very remote Himalayas in Tibet and Nepal. That's probably for me, like, travel bucket list number one.
Wow, that sounds amazing. And what does it mean to be human?
I think to be human means to experience the full range of emotions that it means to be human. So both the difficult emotions like grief and sadness and anger and desire, but also the much more positive and beneficial emotions, joy and bliss and awe and love and oneness. So for me, to be human means to really embrace the full capacity of the human experience and to be open to the full capacity of the human experience.
That's beautiful. Well, Paul, where can listeners connect with you? What products and services do you offer? Where can we find you?
So go to Third Wave, thethirdwave.co. That's our educational platform. You can find everything there. I'm at paulaustin.co. That's my personal, or I'm on Instagram and Twitter. Just search paulaustin3w. And then if there are any practitioners who are listening to this who are interested in going deeper into this work, we offer a training program for coaches and doctors and clinicians on how to work with psychedelics, specifically psilocybin. And so if folks are interested in that, they can find more details about that on the Third Wave. So the thirdwave.co is the best sort of starting point and just explore there. We have a podcast ourselves. So if you want to go deeper into this topic, tune into our podcast. And I appreciate you hopping on. We had some technical issues, which no one will know about once this gets published because I'm sure you have an excellent team, but I appreciate your patience and sort of handling and navigating all of this with me.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for doing this work and, you know, kind of being here on the edge of the changes that we're getting with psychedelics and something that can really help a lot of people and hopefully connect us. I know you're saying that there's, you know, 8 million people that have done mushrooms. I'm hoping that the more people are doing psychedelics, the more kind we are to one another and that
That's
we find that connection and that joy and togetherness that brings humanity together rather than drives us apart. So thank you for your work. I appreciate your time today. And I hope that you have a very plantastic day.
Thank you, Dr. Yami. My name is Paul Austin and I am human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast at doctoryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.